This is KCBX, Central Coast Public Radio, here on NPR One.
I'm correspondent Tom Wilmer, reporting from the Upper Cumberland region of Tennessee. With Nashville to the west, Knoxville to the east, and Chattanooga to the south, and all three less than 90 miles away, the Cumberland region is the epicenter of authentic Tennessee. State parks, wild water kayaking, hiking, boating, and fishing are big draws here, along with savoring small-town culture at its best. Come along as we visit with some of the locals. Rosanna Horst is co-owner of the Country Porch General Store in the Mennonite village of Muddy Pond. Rosanna shares insights about life in the rural Mennonite community, where community and God are defining elements of daily life.
There's a high value placed on families and community. Like this tomorrow, there's a work day planned at a family that had a tornado go through.
Horst also explains the functional difference between Mennonite and Amish communities. Next stop is a visit with Jeremy Crabtree, owner of Poets Coffee House in the university town of Cookeville. Jeremy shares insights about life in Cookeville and how his coffee house functions as a de facto community center and more.
I think it is a great place. You know, obviously we got college kids, so sometimes you come in here and it looks like a computer lab.
Right.
But for the most part, there's just a lot of people that just like to meet and hang out and talk. And so I think that's just another picture of the community. It's just a place where people are wanting to connect and want to hang out.
Beth Thompson is director of the Cookeville Depot Museum, and she talks about her passion for bringing history to life with engaging activities for kids.
If you want to show your kids what a real steam engine looks like, that's not something that they get to climb aboard every day.
And there it is.
And there it is.
And then it's off to Dale Hollow Lake for a chat with Tom Allen, general manager at the Sunset Marina, where houseboat rentals attract vacationers from across America.
Dale Hollow Lake has got what anybody wants for a good family vacation: water sports, fishing.
Tom also proudly notes that Dale Hollow Lake retains the world record title for the largest smallmouth bass ever hooked.
Now, talking about the economy, like you were asking, see, this is just a little slice. If you look at just 10 miles from here, little areas called Hanging Limb, you go there and it's like you're in a different world from here.
Back in time?
Oh my goodness. It's like, I don't know if you've seen the Christie movies, you know, the old Appalachian things. She worked with these people who were so backward, and they were just, you know, uneducated and superstitious. And you go 10 miles from here, you can get into that countryside, and there it is very, very low income, you know, government subsidized everything. But here we have our own little culture that's totally different.
Do you think that the operative, it's the Mennonite church that has a lot to do with that, the culture?
It is a lot to do with that, and I don't want to speak arrogantly in that sense, but yeah, we were all raised to work. And it's not like we give our children a lot of opportunities. In one sense, we don't provide them with a college education or something like that. But from little on up, they learn to work.
But some do go on to go to
some
college.
Some do, right, exactly.
It's not a negative.
No. Actually, one of the girls from our church is going to nursing school right down here at the college. But, you know, a lot of them just choose to do, you know, an apprentice type of thing. Mm-hmm. They learn a trade, and they learn to be very frugal and save their money. And, yeah, they often own a business at a young age. So,
tell us a little bit more about the Mennonite community and communities around here.
Well, around here, they're probably a little bit distinctive because it's not a large community. When you have a large community that's been established for, like you said earlier, maybe 100 years, it can be a lot more traditional. And there's people that aren't even aware of why they are an Amish person or a Mennonite person. for a lot of us, it's second or third generation. A few are first generation. We have people attending the church that have no type of Mennonite or Amish background whatsoever, and they just come because, you know, they like the values.
The sense of community.
Mm-hmm, the sense of community and the values. So,
but how the Mennonites came to be here, or this has to do with the Pennsylvania Dutch.
You'd have to talk to somebody more knowledgeable than I, but I think maybe around 1,000 acres or something. And individual families then bought those pieces of property and established their own little homes and farms and that type of thing.
So intrinsic to the church or the community has everything to do with values, correct?
It does. It's not necessarily that we would consider ourselves more Christian than a Baptist church down the road. I don't want to say that. You know, the gospel is free for everybody. But there's a high value placed on families and community. Like this tomorrow, there's a work day planned at a family that had a tornado go through. So at 3 o'clock, most of the guys from our church will probably turn up, and they'll work together until the place is cleaned up. You know, there's not a lot of dependence on government. We don't believe in putting our old people in nursing homes, you know, unless it was really a needed thing. I take care of my 97-year-old mother, and that's kind of the value that we work with, is that family is first. God is first, but He teaches us to make our family a strong priority. So, yeah.
Interesting. The delineation between Amish and Mennonite. Can you talk to us about the difference? Because it's pretty big time in function, your day-to-day life.
Right. So I'm not a historian, but I know that there was, they had common roots with an Anabaptist type of root. But then I believe the Mennonites split from the Amish in the sense of a little bit different value, probably. Probably the Amish value tradition a lot more highly.
A lot of that has to do with a rejection of things modern.
Yeah, absolutely.
For example, you drive a car.
Right.
But you would not if you were in Pennsylvania.
Not if I was part of an Amish community, right. And we do have Amish communities, you know, not too far from here. Right. We don't reject modern things. We have smartphones, we have computers, but at the same time, we really, really try to teach the proper use of the things. Mm-hmm. And it's not that we don't face challenges like every person does with those things.
Because we're human.
Absolutely. And because we have young people who face temptations, things that they shouldn't have to see, they see. But yeah, we're trying to stick to the proper use of the modern technology.
But it obviously is a very viable, workable philosophy and way of living. It's not just a religion. Mm-hmm. It's a lifestyle, right?
I mean, to me it is.
Yeah.
To us it is, obviously. People who come from a different background are totally unfamiliar with Mennonites or Amish find it very difficult. We have a lot of people that come and...
Why? What's the resistance?
I'm sure it's partially our fault. Mm-hmm. And it's partially because it's so totally different. The mindset is so totally different than the very individualistic mindset that is in normal culture, in American culture.
Give me an example of something where people would be shocked or resistance. Is it more kind of the communal philosophy?
And it's not that we share all things in common. Each family is self-governing. It's not that, you know, but... Let's take a typical Sunday when we go to church. We go to church, we worship together, the church lets out. And in our culture, we expect to go home to each other's homes for lunch. We don't expect to go out to a restaurant by ourselves or just go home and, be alone the whole afternoon. There's so much fellowship. And so there's a lot of, some people are private. And they feel like it's kind of an intrusion into their privacy, and you don't have any business, why are you paying attention to this? And we've grown up with it, so to us, it's valuable.
But I was, as you're talking, I'm thinking, if you're born and raised into that, then it's very comfortable. But you're right, somebody jumping in or coming in would be very different.
Yeah. I think that's about the long and short of it, you know.
And how about you as a Mennonite community and being open to people like me coming into your town?
I think that's probably somewhat individual.
For sure.
I mean, I think that the more modern the Mennonites, the more open they are. If you go to an Amish community, they probably won't want you to take their photo. They'll resist that. They're very private, whereas we're just not that way. We have good friends, you know, with our neighbors, and that's not an issue. So.
In my time throughout the Midwest, I would say shyness is the operative.
What is? Oh, shyness.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Would that be fair?
That could be. Yeah. I would say that's partially it. Also because they actually feel like photos are evil.
Right.
That's part of the reason. And so they've been taught very strongly about that. But yeah. And even among the Mennonites, I think you'll find that shyness is an issue.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Which is understandable.
Yeah. Right.
So talk to us about coming, where we are right now and coming here to visit this community.
Okay, well, this is Muddy Pond, Tennessee, and this community started probably 40 or 50 years ago with a group of Amish that came from Pennsylvania, and they basically, I believe, were looking for property that was affordable, because in states like Pennsylvania, the property has been, it's so elevated as far as the price that they can't afford it for their large families. So there were several large families that came here, and the community basically is a derivative of those large families. It's the children and grandchildren, and then, you know, other people have moved in and married in, that type of thing. But it's changed over the years because the large Amish community moved to Kentucky and left more of a Mennonite flavor here. So
they came here first and then moved on.
A lot of the ones who wanted to stay Amish moved out. And they moved to another, what they would have called a mother church, that was more what they wanted to be. And so, yeah, that's over in Kentucky now.
So what is here? What in the community? I just dipped right in and came right to the store here.
Yeah, well, it's kind of a puzzle to us why people like to come here, because this is just our home and it's our businesses. But I think our homes and businesses are probably unique enough that they do draw attention. So there's some agriculture. The main thing that in the fall draws people here, of course, is the leaf color, but also the sorghum cooking that goes on, the sorghum molasses. And there's two families and all their children and grandchildren that do that. And that's every fall through September and October. Then other than that, there's just local businesses. There's leather shops. And
that was a big... I went to the leather shop. That was huge.
Yeah. It's actually one father who was part of the original group that moved down here. And he's passed on, but his two sons and two grandsons now own leather shops. So that's... Yeah. And then the other family is the Gunther family that does the sorghum mill. And there's also a Maslin family. And then the rest of us just own varied businesses. We actually have a little cabin rental here that we do vacation rentals, three cabins, and then a part in this store.
In this store, what's it called?
This is the Country Porch.
And it's kind of almost a general store in a way, isn't it?
It is a general store. There's another general store down the road, but the reason we felt this store was an addition to the community is because we do serve sandwiches, soups, things on homemade bread, and a lot of people are coming for the baked goods. And
That's what got me first. So I would say, this is a restaurant with a general store.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's a place for somebody to get a sandwich at least, you know, and it's a little bit of a unique sandwich because everything's done on homemade bread and things are in-house. So, yeah.
All right. Well, we'd love to spend the whole afternoon with you, but my bus is leaving.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for sharing.
Thank you for coming.
Yeah, and your name?
Rosanna Horst, H-O-R-S-T.
And we are in?
Muddy Pond, Tennessee.
Muddy Pond, I love it. And that's the Muddy Pond right there?
No. It is here, but it's down the road about 2 miles, so, yeah.
Thanks for sharing.
You're welcome, thank you.
You're very welcome.
I'm Tom Wilmer reporting from Muddy Pond, Tennessee. We'll see you here.
Poets Coffee, Cookeville, Tennessee.
The poet. Do you do poetry here?
We get that asked a lot. We actually don't. So the name actually, when the business actually started about 25 years ago, and when they started it, they called it Poets on the Square.
Were the original poet people, were they thinking they would do that or no?
I think it was more just like in the mid-90s, coffee shops were related to like writers and poetry. It's just kind of the thought you got.
Right, right.
So they named it Poets, and then once we took over 4.5 years ago, we shortened it to Poets Coffee. Our second location, it's 2 blocks away, that has the drive-through. That one's called Poets South because it's just south of Poets. So
this is your home now, but you weren't born and raised here, right?
Right. I was born in Livingston, Tennessee, grew up there, and then went to college here in Cookeville. So lived there and then moved to Memphis for 4 years and then Dallas for 4 years. So
in your first and last name?
Jeremy Crabtree.
Yeah. You got a wife and kids?
I do. Lauren Crabtree, and I've got 3 kids. I got a 7-year-old Jacob, a 5-year-old Ruthie, and a 2-year-old John.
So why here? You could have settled anywhere. You could have wound up in Dallas easily.
Right. We spent 4 years in Dallas, and my wife being from Memphis, me being from Cookeville, we're ready next chapter in our lives, and we'd had 2 kids. And so we really wanted to get back to Tennessee. We love Tennessee. We really want to get back to family, closer to family. And so,
but you had no clue you were going to run a coffee house and a little restaurant.
No clue at all. We knew we were coming back, but we didn't know to what. And so I started looking for jobs in Memphis, Nashville, here. And then my brother-in-law called and said, hey, I don't know if you'd ever consider this, but the little coffee shop in Cookeville, they're wanting to sell. And so
so it really was, in many respects, literal timing.
Right.
If this coffee shop had not come up for sale at that time, you might be in Nashville.
Right, right. I could be anywhere.
Yeah, it's weird how life works that
way. Yeah, for sure.
Okay,
for
sure. So here you are, and you're obviously immersed in the community because the community, I can already see, comes to see you every morning.
Right.
So you have a real pulse beat on the vitality and the attitude and the feelings of Cookeville.
Right. Yeah, Cookeville is growing, and it's a great town, great town for people my age that are raising kids. And
I mean, interrupt, but it seems as I travel around, even just Tennessee, that those areas that have a university or a tech school or a community college nearby seems to be a part of the formula for vitality of a community.
Yeah, in some respects, it is for sure. We can see when the university's in and out a little bit. It's not like we depend on that.
Sure. No, I understand, but it's part of that formula,
right,
of what,
right,
makes,
right,
a town like Cookeville,
absolutely,
a happening town, a vibrant town, a growing town,
yeah,
and not a dying town.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, we've just tried to create a place where everyone feels welcome. And, you know, like I said earlier, it's kind of, I feel like it's Cookeville's living room. You know, anyone wants to hang out here, and so we're full with people all the time that just, you know, great conversations. We've had business deals happen here. We've had, actually, we've had a wedding here that a couple had met here, want to get married here. And so we've done weddings and Bible studies, business meetings, moms clubs.
Part of the heartbeat of the community.
Right. You know, we have our outside windows as posters for everything going on in the community, so everyone can kind of check in and see what's going on. And so, yeah, we kind of love being that kind of piece of Cookeville and playing our part.
You're in a unique position. The community literally come funnel through your front door. You know, tell me about some of the things that you're proud of that are cool that you've noticed happening in your town.
You know, just went through some elections for the city and for the county, and I think we've got elected some really cool folks on city council that I'm really excited about, that kind of wants to see good things happen. You know, we have a, you know, just on the west side of the downtown area, it's starting to develop and grow and get bigger. We got a convention center coming.
So very much on the community civic leaders, a pro-business,
right,
attitude.
Pro-business,
pro. And what's interesting, as you know, is a double-edged sword, because you could be perceived as a negative of being pro-business,
right,
you know.
Right.
And yet, you're going, really? Well, how do you keep a town going if you don't.
Yeah.
And it seems to me that it's that balance, controls.
Absolutely. And I think Ricky Shelton, our mayor, has done a really good job. I think the city creates a lot of fun events for the town to come out to. So lots of music in the parks. We got a slide of the city where they bring in a huge water slide right down Main Street.
Oh, you're kidding.
We have cooking on the square. We have the Fall Fun Fest. We have all kinds of Christmas markets. And so I think people love Cookeville and love having events. And so we have Wine on the West Side, where they just have wine tastings for a night, and then Taste of the Town, where local restaurants come out and people buy tickets and get to taste food from local restaurants. And so just people are very pro Cookeville and pro Tennessee. And so it's just a fun town to live in and be a part of.
And it is semi-central. I mean, it's not that far from Nashville, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's funny. I have friends that have Airbnbs here in Cookeville, and there's a lot of people from Nashville that are coming here for the weekends just to kind of get away from the craziness of how fast Nashville's growing, which is good. But looking at our online website, reaches, all that kind of stuff, we have a lot of people stopping by that are just traveling through, maybe going to Knoxville, Chattanooga. But, yeah, we're right in between Nashville, Knoxville, and Chattanooga.
Oh, interesting. The triangle,
Yeah.
The Northern Bermuda Triangle.
Yes, the Northern Bermuda.
So what I find interesting, you, like me, we have friends in Nashville that almost roll their eyes with the overdevelopment, with the gridlock of traffic, of the skyrocketing real estate. And we both know people that have to live 30 miles outside of Nashville to work in Nashville. So that momentum is getting, depends whether you're a realtor or not, getting getting better or worse.
Right.
But bottom line, there are a lot of young people like you that I know that are roll their eyes and they're looking for an alternative to Nashville out of necessity, out of survival.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I think too, and I don't know if I'm 37, so I don't know where I fall as a millennial or whatever, but
a mid-level
millennial. But I do feel like, you know, not to sound like the old guy, but technology and phones, it's like we're so overconnected and so busy and so crowded that those three things coming together just wears on you. And so it's like a fresh breath air to live 3 minutes from my business and not get stuck in traffic. My manager lives two blocks away and can walk here. Just a little bit slower pace of life here. And
I've been sitting in here all morning and watching the locals come and go. And look around, there is one person in the whole place with an iPhone in their mitt. And other than that, everybody is in conversation. That's refreshing right in itself.
Yeah, I do. I think it is a great place. You know, obviously we got college kids, so sometimes you come in here and it looks like a computer lab.
Right.
But for the most part, there's just a lot of people that just like to meet and hang out and talk. And so I think this is just another picture of the community. It's just a place where people are wanting to connect and want to hang out.
Well, I love it. Well, thanks for sharing. So if you had to sum up what's coolest, why you're most proud of being in Cookeville, and why somebody should come here.
Yeah, I love Cookeville. I don't think I ever want to move and ever want to leave. I think the size that it is awesome. It's a great place for me to raise my kids.
Safe, friendly.
Very, very safe. I've never dealt with any crime, personally. Just good community here. We got great friends here. It's kind of fun, you know, obviously for me to have this part that's so much a part of Cookeville that helps bring that together. Cookeville's a great stop if you're going traveling through, or a great place to live if you're looking to find a new place to go. So,
for further information.
My name is Jeremy Crabtree, and our website is poetscookeville.com, or we can be reached at poetscookeville@gmail.com.
Oh, Jeremy, thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Train on out and sip out here to squeal. Go tell my true love, I can't roll the wheel.
Beth Thompson, and here we are in Cookeville, Tennessee, And you live in the past.
I do live in the past. I manage two City of Cookeville museums, the Cookeville History Museum and the Cookeville Depot Museum.
It's double-layered history because it's a historical museum in a living history building.
Absolutely. Our biggest artifact that we own is the Depot building itself, built in 1909, part of the Tennessee Central Railroad Company back then, and we're very lucky to still have it, as it was not destroyed in the mid-70s with most of the other depots on the line.
What a precious gift that it did get saved from the wrecking ball.
Absolutely, and I am lucky enough to call it my office. That's where I go to work every day. I have a beautiful commute.
Your mission, your passion in life is breathing life into history, especially for the kids and the young people. Tell some of the ways that you do that.
Absolutely. We try and do a lot of different events. We try to offer free family fun that not only entertains but enlightens and educates. We do history hikes between our two museums. They're a block and a half apart. We try and plant some costumed characters between them, maybe plant some clues where they have to find them. We want the kids to realize that it's not just some boring old history, but because they live here, it's their history. We want that to come alive in them.
Does it work? Do the kids trip on the living history characters and get a sense of, oh my gosh, that's what it was like back in the day?
Absolutely. And, you know, our Pioneer Day that we do is a really big one because they actually do a lot of hands-on activities. You know, they're shaking their cream into butter and they're realizing that some of those kids didn't have it as good as they did.
Tell us about some of the other projects that you do, the events and whatnot that kids love.
We do a cemetery walk every other year in our city cemetery, and we dig up some folks and they tell us their stories, which people just absolutely love that. It always sells out. We have a night at the museums that is, again, between our two museums, and some characters come to life because, as you know, if you close the doors and lock up and turn the lights off, all the artifacts come to life. So we have to be sure to bring that out on the streets every now and then.
That's really cool. Tell us a little bit more about your mission and your passion and what you're most proud of.
Well, we are very proud of the work that we've done. We have three staff members. Pam Philpo is our exhibit specialist. Ashley McKee is our education specialist. And, you know, with three people in two museums, we managed to get quite a bit of stuff out there for folks, and we're super proud of that. We would love people to come by anytime. We're open Tuesday through Saturday from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Always free. Our museum's always engaging, always free. And we're very happy to offer that to not only our community, but all the folks that are stopping by. We're right on I-40, so it makes it really
easy.
Real easy,
yeah.
No
detour required.
Well, and you know, if you want to show your kids what a real steam engine looks like, that's not something that they get to climb aboard every day.
And there it is.
And there it is.
And a caboose right behind it.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And so taking that a step further, the roots of Cookeville, going back 100-some years, it was the train, right?
It was. The train is what really brought economic growth and development to Cookeville. And us being here on what we call the West Side is where the depot was, and that's everything sprung up around that depot. Eventually, the interstate was built, and everything moved a few miles south, but we still feel like this is where the magic happens in Cookeville. And like you said, this is where our history comes to life. And if you really want to get into a town, you don't stay near the interstate because everyone's got a Wendy's and Walmart, you know, and there's nothing wrong with that. But if you want to see that town's character, you come in, come on in a few miles.
Come to the railroad tracks.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. Does the train still come through here?
About once a week, we have a freight train that does about 20 hopper cars that go up to Monterey, which is just east of here in our same county.
Didn't we hear a train whistle earlier?
Maybe. Yeah. And we have a couple times a year an excursion train comes by. They run them out of Nashville.
Like a steam engine?
It's not. It's a beautiful vintage 1955 diesel. Gorgeous.
So they probably have old cars, Pullman.
They're Harrimans.
Really
nice. Yeah. They're really nice.
Well, Beth, what a pleasure. I'm so glad you're here and that we got to visit.
Well, welcome to Cookeville. We're so glad to have you. Thank you for having me.
Can you give us like a website? where they, people could find out more?
We have CookvilleDepot.com and CookvilleHistoryMuseum.com. We also have Facebook presence. We're on Instagram. We're on Twitter. You know.
What works the best for you, social media?
Facebook, yeah. It just really gets it out there. And, you know, people of all ages do Facebook, and our demographic is definitely runs the gamut of the age groups. So.
Very cool. Well, thanks again, Beth.
Thank you. My name is Beth Thompson. I'm the museum's manager for the City of Cookeville Leisure Services Department.
Love it. Well, I'm jealous. You get to live in history.
It's great. Yeah. Thank you.
My name's Tom Allen. I'm the Vice President and General Manager of Sunset Marina and Resort.
Where are we?
We're on Del Hollow Lake, the prettiest lake in the nation. We're about 118 miles from the Nashville Airport.
So are there people that fly in just to come to the park?
We do have people that fly in, and they're meeting other family members from other parts of the country. They meet here on Del Hollow Lake for family reunions and get-togethers. And
family reunion, especially where you and I are right now, which is on a houseboat.
Absolutely. We have a lot of houseboat families that come every year, and their families come from all over the world to meet here together, and that's their annual vacation on board a houseboat here on Del Hollow Lake.
The houseboat we're on right now, what, sleeps about 10, 9?
It has 6 private bedrooms, queen bedrooms, and then it has a sleeper sofa in the living area. So it would sleep up to 14 if needed.
Let's just take a medium cost target week. Maybe, what, $3,500, $4,000 for the week?
$3,500 is a good mid-range, depending on what time of year you come. Stay a full 7 nights, yes.
Okay, and let's break that down per person per night. What would that amount to?
We have a fleet of 12 rental houseboats, and we've got 3 different floor plans. So we've got small boats, medium boats, and then this big flagship that we're on now. You can actually get a houseboat, go in with a family member, depending on what time of year you come. You can do it for less than $50 a night per person.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
And let's presume that one out of those 14 can drive a houseboat.
Well, we have always had success in training the people to drive our houseboats when they pick them up, and we spend as much time with them until they say we're ready to go out on our own. And that's the uniqueness of a houseboat vacation. They can take the boat and find their own secluded cove and spend a week and feel like they're a million miles from anywhere.
What else is here at the lake?
Our marina, Sunset Marina and Resort, has 26 rental cabins that range from 1-bedroom, 2-bedroom, all the way up to 4-bedroom chalets. And then we have covered boat slips for people to bring their own boat and put them in a covered boat slip near their cabin. We're right next door to the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers Obi River Campground and Recreation Area, which has a swimming beach and really state-of-the-art campsites right near water's edge. It's just Del Hollow Lake has got what anybody wants for a good family vacation. Water sports, fishing. Del Hollow's known for world record smallmouth bass. In fact, the largest 3 smallmouth caught in the world caught from these waters.
That's really incredible.
Yes, it is. And fishermen still try to break that record, but we think someday it might be broken again.
You have, what, 620 miles of shoreline?
Del Hollow Lake, which was created in 1943 by the building of Del Hollow Dam, has 620 miles of shoreline and 28,000 acres of surface water to fish on, play on, enjoy, explore, and just it's a water sports paradise, really.
And it was your wife or somebody was talking about the connection with the Civil War here.
This whole area has a lot of Civil War history contained for, and there's a lot of folks that spend some time in our cabins that are Civil War buffs, and they go out and look at the markers and the various skirmishes and events that happened in and around this area. And
Tom, thanks for sharing. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. We hope you'll come back and vacation here.
I'd be honored.
My name is Tom Allen. I'm the Vice President and General Manager of Sunset Marina and Resort. SunsetMarina.com for all the information for a great trip to Del Hollow Lake.
Thanks again, Tom. I'm Tom Wilmer, reporting from Tennessee. We'll see you here.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. Produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com.
Underwriting support for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided in part by the Society of St. Vincent de Paul. People often associate the Society of St. Vincent de Paul with thrift stores. Donations like clothing, your gently used couch, or still serviceable washing machine generate funds to assist the Society in putting food on the table for people in need, or keeping the lights on and families in their homes. To find a St. Vincent de Paul thrift store in your area, visit svdpusa.org. Once again, svdpusa.org. And whether you're shopping for new or used items, donating them, or volunteering, you're helping the Society of St. Vincent de Paul help others.
If you don't quit betting, boy, them dice won't pay. It's gonna send you home on your yes, yes, yes. My slumpy baby, you ain't gonna work.